Rhonda Hudson.
Hi, Rhonda. This is Michael Schur.
Hi, how are you?
Are we in the right place? Is this for the audio conference for NACSW?
Yes.
Okay.
Devon Allen.
Hi, Devon. This is Michael Schur.
Hi. Hi. I'm glad to be a part of this conference.
Great.
So I know we're going to get started in a few minutes.
I hope Rick and Ken will join us and introduce and get started.
Okay. Do you have a number of people on already?
Just us three. But from what I hear...
Rhonda Hudson here.
I've heard that there's about 20 people calling in.
Oh, okay. So where are you from, Rhonda?
I'm in Jackson, Tennessee at Union University. You?
Okay, I'm from Nyack College here in Nyack, New York.
Oh, wow.
I was just up there in New York a couple of weeks ago. Drove right past your downtown campus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Rick Kamiak's case.
Hi, this is Ken.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, Ken. Hey, Michael. Glad you're
hey, Michael.
Board.
Who was that?
Ken.
Oh, hi, Ken.
Hello, my name is Chryson from University of Kentucky.
Hi, Chryson.
Hello.
Hey, Chryson. Great to have you on the call.
Hello, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm well here. Yourself?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good, good. Calling from Kentucky?
Yes, thanks.
I wonder if you were traveling for the summer.
No.
Rick, I'm new to this, so should I just hang back and be quiet and not talk till you get ready and everyone's started? And...
Yeah. Usually we'll try to just do greetings, give folks a chance to start in. And,
okay.
And Ken, you'll lead us off like 4 or 5 minutes after the hour?
Yeah, I was thinking a few minutes after, just to give people time to log in.
And it's 60 minutes, so you want me to talk for a little bit, then have time for questions, right?
Yeah, it's pretty flexible. A lot of times, we do 20 to 30 minutes of kind of presenting and then questions afterwards, if that sounds okay to you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Stacy.
Hi, Stacy.
Hey, Stacy. Welcome to the call.
Thanks. And Jill Schreiber.
Hey,
hi, Jill.
Hey.
I was just thinking these hot July days about that time a couple years ago at Calvin.
Oh, yep. Both of us there with our air-conditioned-less cars.
Oh, yes. I trust yours is still in good working order.
Sure thing. And you've got your red one?
I do. I just cracked 272,000 miles, so I'm going for the record.
You're beating me.
We might make you an honorary Mennonite, Rick.
That would be one of the happiest days of my life. I consider that a high, high honor.
Phyllis Platt.
Hi, Phyllis.
Hey.
Hi. And
hey, Phyllis.
This is
welcome.
Pam Chris.
Hey, Pam. Great to have you on the call. We've got a lot of geography covered today.
Yeah.
Rick, we've got 4 people from Andrews University here.
You never have too many from Andrews.
Well, we only have 4 at this point.
And this is Phyllis. I also have Stacy Deck, who's joining me. We're at Spalding in Louisville.
Great. So glad you
could
join the call today.
Hi, this is Terry Terrio.
Hi.
Hello, welcome
to
our
call.
Thank you.
Hi, Terry.
Hi.
How's the decision coming? Good.
Oh, that's why I'm listening to the conference call this morning, to get me going here.
Folks, I think we're going to take just one more minute, see if anyone's kind of late coming in, and then I'll go ahead and introduce our speaker, and we'll kind of get started. So talk amongst yourselves for another minute or so.
Hey, Ken, could I ask, when you do the introductions, can you just remind folks that when Michael's talking, I'm going to mute folks out
okay.
because the background noise I won't drown him out. But then whenever, Michael, you are ready for question and answer, just let me know and I'll unmute the lines.
And if I forget to mention at the end, remind me about the opportunity to write for the CSW Religion and Spirituality Work Group resource.
Oh, very good,
gonna
yeah.
It's going to go live next month.
Excellent.
Hello, this is Marlene Milner.
Hey,
hi, Marlene.
Made it. Welcome.
Yay, yeah, thank you.
Hi, Marlene, it's Jill Schreiber.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well, how are you?
Very good.
Hi, Marlene, this is your closest worker, Pam Crist.
Oh, hey, Pam.
But anyway, we have to meet here.
That's right. All right. Well, we've got a circle of friends, I see.
Yes.
Well, since my clock is saying we're going on 5 after 12, I think I'm going to go ahead and get us started just so we have time to kind of cover everything we want to do. My name's Ken Stoltzfus. For the last couple of years, I've been trying to help Rick to coordinate some extra activities for the Educators Member Interest Group here at NECSW. One of the things we've been trying to do is get together every quarter or so via conference call technology just to talk about an issue that would be of interest to social work educators. And so our presentation today comes out of a discussion by email that Michael and I had last year, where Michael was sharing with me, he was kind enough to share with me some of his strategies for how he has been so prolific in writing and scholarship and research. And so out of that kind of grew this idea for a conference call. So what I'd like to do is just go ahead and introduce our speaker today, Dr. Michael Schur. Michael is an associate professor of social work at Baylor University. In the last 8 years, Michael's written more than 50 publications, including 2 books, on several areas of research and scholarship. In 2010, Michael received the International Young Scholars Award for his research from the University of Hong Kong. Excuse me. He's married to Stacy, and the couple has 3 children. And the topic today is going to be finding time for research and scholarship. And so Michael is going to kind of spend some time talking about some of his strategies. And then after Michael kind of gives his talk, we'll have some time for just open discussion about this. And I suspect this is kind of a hot topic. I wasn't sure what sort of an audience we'd get this time of the year when everyone's getting ready for the semester, but it seems like a lot of people have an interest in this. And so I'm really glad that you all could join us today. While Michael's speaking, the rest of us are going to be muted out just so that there's not background noise. But then when the time for questions and discussion comes up, Rick will be able to kind of put us back in so that everyone's able to be heard again. So, Michael, thanks for being with us today, and we'll just turn it over to you now.
Ken, will you give me like a 5 minutes if I'm getting close to 25, 30 minutes and we want to stop if I happen to be going that long? I don't think I will, but is that possible? Okay. Well, welcome, everyone. The way I've defined and titled our conversation is a little bit different from what Ken just described. I'm titling it Developing the Mindset and Practices for Research and Scholarship. I think the two go together, thinking about sort of how we approach what we do, and then also the disciplines and the practices for being a productive scholar. And I always separate research and scholarship because sometimes there's research where, when I think of research of discovery, and then there's the scholar, and I think for someone who has a doctorate in social work or PhD, it's not just discovering information, it's pushing the envelope for what's new, what's next, thinking about those findings in a new way than what's already thought of in the field. And scholarship really approaches that other part of what I think we're called to do as educators. Now, I have a couple assumptions that I bring to this and then I approach. I really define myself as a Christian educator and scholar in social work. So I am quite strongly connected, and everything sort of flows from that identity. A lot of the things that I'll share are, although anecdotal, I have done some reading of sort of how to – there's books out there on being a productive writer. I'm sure many of you are – aware of Boyce's book on professors as writers. It's funny, just skimming through some of his work earlier this morning, he approaches the whole notion almost from the disease model. Like if someone who's dealing with an addiction, he starts with all the reasons why people can't write, and then he even has a chapter on relapse later on in the chapter. And I just don't, I just don't approach writing that way at all. So while I might hit on some of those things in common practice that you might have heard or read about, I just come at it from a completely, I guess, different inductive beginning. A couple other things that are important. I needed to think through, so what I've developed and how I go about writing, you know, really was very pragmatic. You know, I'm married. I've been married for 21 years. I have three children. And also teaching at a small Christian university at first and now teaching at Baylor, where even though Baylor is research one, we really operate, at least in the school social work, very much like a small Christian school. We all teach 2 to 3 classes. And so we have to fit, you know, our research has to fit and scholarship time in with what we do. And I have three kids, and I'm sure others have children. And so where is the time for coaching soccer and football and doing things with the family? And so I had to develop a way to be productive that also allowed me to be a good husband and a good father first, and did not pit my family and other interests against my love of writing. So with that in mind, I really had to think through how to fit this into my work day. When I was a doctoral student, I did some of the, you know, the late night writing and the cramming for things to try to get things done. But it really, you know, I guess my wife is pretty strong-willed, and you know, she always reminds me that she's not a single parent early on. And when I returned from my PhD. And so I had to really think through how am I going to do this long term, and I once read in a book early on in my education as a doctorate that academia can be a jealous lover, and I have found that to be true. If you don't set boundaries from the beginning, either you ignore both or you choose one in front of the other. And so I've really tried to work out a way to be productive and be at home and present. Around my screen at the office are a couple of key verses that I sort of are my foundation for productive writing, research, and scholarship. And they just help me think about who my audience is, what's sort of the meaning of my work, and sort of what is the mindset or the style that I need to be writing about. And sort of what are the disciplines that connect me to being a productive writer. So I'll just share these for me, you know, with you and take them or leave them. The first one is from Matthew 9:37-38. It says, "Then he said to his disciples, 'The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field.'" For me, that really sets for me the mindset of the work that is laid out before us as Christian educators. There is so much to be written. There's so many things to be thought of and in social work as far as helping people and enhancing well-being. I believe Christian educators and scholars in each discipline, their role is to create a credible critique of the world. To provide a, I don't know if apologetic is the right word, but an account of a profession and going about a discipline in a way that glorifies the Lord. And so that verse just helps me think about, you know, why I do the work that I do. The style of my work, I really come from Colossians 4:6, really informs how I think about the way I write. It's Colossians 4:6 says, let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. that has really developed into a style. Some of you who know me better than others know that, you know, sometimes I push the envelope and I really think of that, and maybe I rationalize that, season with salt, and learn how to say what I need to say to the community of scholars in a way that makes a contribution. And I really believe as scholars we're to think, to push people to think through not just what to think about today or what is, but to think about what it should be. And so that always gives me sort of the motivation and the thought to think through how I want to write what I write. And finally, this helps me deal with who my audience is. It helps me deal with eliminating any fear of failure, getting my mindset right, and getting the behaviors right. Boyce talks about perfectionism and fear of failure as two of the main obstacles to writers, and this really helps me. This is from Philippians 4:4-7. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. I really believe that my audience, my primary audience, is God. I really believe that I really approach, and sort of part of that mindset is I never approach writing as an anxious thing that I have to do to earn someone's respect or to get tenure or to complete a project. It's always a creative endeavor that I'm able to do and I'm blessed to have an opportunity to do as a way of expressing or glorifying the Lord. And then finally, spending time in prayer in God's Word, thinking through what God's Word has to say about all that has to do with life. But for me, I always think about it in terms of a lens for social work and the role and social work practice. Really helps me think through that. For me to be an effective, productive scholar, that it begins with my spiritual disciplines, the time I spend with God every day in prayer and in His God's Word and reflection. So those things, those parts of my life, are never in competition with trying to get an article out or write several articles. I never stop reading the Bible or going to church or take a Sunday or put off other things so I can work on a manuscript. They're not pre-opposed to each other. They work together. So I'm never sort of anxious in anything that I'm working on. It also helps me set my mindset because I know that I'm fallen and that, you know, in God's eyes, I'm 100%. So in my fallenness, you know, by fear of failure kind of dissipates. I don't have to worry about me being perfect. I just have to be working on doing the best I can and who I am and continue to work at it, and I don't really worry about sort of how it's received at the other end. All right, so that's just sort of scriptural things, but now let me talk more about how that plays out into developing the mindset for productive scholarship. And I'm going to talk in first person, and these are things that I do or that I do for myself, and I will sort of try to talk about what's important for others. One, it's important to always approach writing as you're always making progress. So I never think about it, just like we would think about when we do clinical work with individuals or groups, that those cognitive messages that we send ourselves, I believe impacts the kind of writing or what I'm going to do. So in my mind, I am always making progress. Progress is a very loose term that I use, whether I'm reading for a project, writing actively on a project, revising a project, whatever it is I'm doing, I am never behind. In my head, there's no more. See, we're so used to when you're coming out of school and then you're working on a PhD, meeting deadlines, that you know, early on, that's how I first acted, is to meet deadlines. And I never miss deadlines, but I set up my own deadlines so that I am never behind. If I want to go after a grant, I think of the timing and what I can and how I work and whether I will make that period. I never go from the position of starting in a place where I don't think I can do it from the beginning. So I'm always making progress. I'm never behind. Always end every day of writing content and joyful with making at least some progress each day. Writing is for the present and the future, not for now. So if you are a Christian educator or you're a scholar, in your, you know, my mindset is that I'm going to be writing the rest of my life. So I better get into a thing where I really love doing it. If I'm not, if I get to a point where it's a job, then I really don't know if I need to be either teaching students or trying to contribute to the field. So somehow I've got to figure out a way to take that love of writing and what I'm working on and think of not so much running for, writing for today, but writing for every day, writing for the future. So it's important to end content and joyful, a sense of gratitude for having the opportunity to be able to creatively express yourself, to collect data, to analyze data. There's so many things we could be doing in our lives, and God has given us this opportunity, and we have you know, something to do and something to contribute. And so it's important to have that right mindset. Finally, set and reset daily, weekly, monthly goals that you meet. Just like in solution focus or strength-based perspective, always set the bar so that you meet whatever your goals are for that day, that week, that month. Remember, we are never behind in our writing. We are always making progress, and we always end content and joyful with the progress that we made. So again, we're writing for life, not just for today. That's a little motto I say. There's no need to put pressure on myself or to cram all night or et cetera. How that impacts me is that, and I try to get younger faculty out of the habit, I try to avoid, and I encourage you to avoid putting writing off for periods of time. So waiting till the summer to get one or two or three articles out of the way, or waiting till November or waiting to December. All you're doing is it's like a pipe creating pressure. You're creating an amount of pressure where now all of a sudden that part of your job becomes a pressure. And what happens if you don't get what you wanted done in that time period? Then, again, for me, I couldn't operate in that way. I'm not able to be fully present with students in class, to be a good advisor, to be a good colleague and work on my committee work. So I'm writing every single day. I never have like a summer writing plan. I'm doing the same thing every single day. Now I take some breaks and vacations from that, but when I'm writing, I write the same way all the time. Another part of the mindset is allow yourself to ask what-if questions. Remember, as doctorates of social work, our job is to create original knowledge, I believe. Original knowledge requires original thinking. So instead of always, when we approach literature and we approach what's out there, it's important to think about what is being said, but what is missing, and allow yourself time to read every day, review literature, brainstorm, process and analyze data are all important parts of our job and our calling, and that's what makes us productive scholars. So read, read, read. The mindset is, as a scholar, taking time to read every day is a part of my job. I put it on my to-do list. So this morning, for instance, I wrote, after this conversation that we have, I will read a little bit. Next day, I'll come back and I'll do it again. Again, always read to understand what is there and what is missing. All right, now I'm going to talk and switch over to actual practices that work for me in my scholarship. Okay, I approach my writing as a flexible range of writing 300 to 500 words every day, 5 days a week. And again, depending on what classes I teach or what I have going on in my life, the last year and a half I was the director of a PhD program. I'm now a commissioner on the Education Policy Committee. So I may adjust those kinds of things, but every day I try to write between 300 and 500 words So far this week, I wrote 600-something Monday, 600-something Tuesday, and this morning I came in and I wrote about 475 words. It could be as few as one sentence or as many as a few hundred more. So you, whatever range works for you. But I would encourage you not to go too much past whatever you think your top of your range is, because you want to be writing for me is a creative, all-consuming endeavor. And so if I wear myself out too much one day, I may not want to or may not look forward to writing the next day. So while it might seem great to get one more paragraph in or one more page in, think of the long term of, can you write like that for the next 30 years? And I know for myself I can't, okay? So staying late that night to write a couple extra pages, it's not worth the argument at home. It's not worth missing a practice or a Wednesday night service or a college or a football game or time with my son or daughter. It's just not worth it. Here's a good saying. A good topic sentence can be a productive day of writing. So just one sentence. Think of it that way. If you need, there were times last year when I was writing the book for on becoming a Christian educator in social work, and I also took on the role of the directing the PhD program, where I literally had to just get a topic sentence written and had to be content with that. Now, I was writing other things. I created 10 syllabi. I was writing all kinds of other kinds of writing. But I at least worked every day on that project. I at least worked on all the other research things that I have going on, at least a little bit. Again, remember, you're developing good habits for a lifetime of writing. Gutting it out or forcing yourself to stare at the screen or to write more, even if you feel up to it, might be counterproductive for the long term. Writing then becomes a chore and not a form of creative expression. For me, where that comes out to now is I've been doing this so long, it's really interesting. I was sharing this with a colleague last year. What happens is, to me, is when I get to that 500 to 600 word threshold, my body physically shuts down. It's almost like that biofeedback in psychology where you get used to the rhythm of how you work. So I've been doing this method for such a long time that physically I just can't go anymore. I always tell people I can no longer do the weekend cramming of something. So when I send, like right now I'm working on writing my next book, and the publisher wants to know like my deadlines, I actually have to break it down. I take the 120 or 30,000 words that I'm going to write, and I break it down and I think through how I'm going to work. And I just don't force myself beyond what I will do each day. I also think it's important to prime. This is another practice of productive scholarship. Prime for the next day of writing. And there's a couple ways to do that. One is end your writing for one day by typing the heading or the subheading for the next section you intend to write. I think it stimulates cognitive pre-writing. For me, cognitive pre-writing is that thinking that's going on at night or when you get away and you go to the gym or you eat dinner, you spend time with your family and you lay down in bed. And for me, sometimes it just happens. I just start thinking about how I'm going to write, what I'm going to write the next day without being overbearing, but something that sort of stimulates where I'm going to be the next day. The other thing is, another way is to prime for the next day is to at least write the topic sentence of a paragraph or the topic sentence of a section that you're going to be writing. That's another way to prime yourself for the next day. I try in every way possible to avoid looking at a blank screen, whether it's blank or whether it's like starting a next section or a next chapter. Put that chapter 2 down. Write that first subsection down. Write that first topic sentence, something that gives you a platform to dive in. Okay, there's a kind of a practice that, again, you'll have to figure out what works for you. I reread everything every day. So when I write a book, I reread the beginning from the beginning of the chapter every day. When I'm writing an article, I reread from the beginning of the article each time. I use that time to do three things. I always think about the flow of the article or the flow of the chapter. I am really picky. I think it's important. I always try to tell students to contemplate word choice. I think about every word that's fitting in there. And then I also use it for revision. Now, if I spend 100 words revising, I count it towards the 300 to 500 daily total. That means I may not write as much new material that day because I spent time and energy revising. It's sort of like similar to how we work with clients in direct practice. You make a little progress, you loop back, you think about what you did, you analyze what you could have done better, you make a little bit more progress, you loop back again, you think about what you could have done again. So by the time I get done with a chapter or a book or an article, and people say, how many drafts have you done? It may be one draft, but I've reread that thing over and over and over and over again. So by the time it then gets reviewed, and then I make another revision again, I'm usually in. If it's going to be accepted, it's usually after that first revision. Second, never sit in front of a blank computer screen. I think that's a common one. I like to use legal pads. I like to scribble out outlines and create legal pads, and then I'll read. And another thing is I'll take what I've written in the legal pad, and then I'll type it again as an outline on the computer. Now, you might think that's a waste of time, but I would tell you that I believe that writing is partially cognitive, partially creative, and partially operant conditioning behavioral. So what you're doing is by just writing the 300 words a day, you're creating and you're reinforcing a behavior, a pattern that you're getting into where you're leaving every day, reinforce that you met your threshold, that you did your writing for the day. You are a writer. You are being productive. You'll be surprised the more you do that, how those outlines really then, once you start doing the chapters or the sections or the articles, really just lend themselves to that. Here's a tip for those that are writing now mostly manuscripts for journals and data and dissertations and thesis. When you get to the results section or you get to the chapter 4 in your dissertation, create all of the tables and the figures first before you write, and then write around them. This way, when you think about your totals, first of all, it creates a map. When you think about how you're going to organize your tables for a chapter, it's going to create a blueprint for what you need to write and the order you need to write. You also won't have to write a little bit, stop, go back, create a table, think about what you wrote in the prose, and then make sure it's connected to what's in the table. You're doing one and then going back through the other. Another practice I use what's called creative calculations to estimate daily productivity. So what does that mean? 300 to 500 words daily. Now what about if I spend an hour and a half analyzing data, running tests? Or what if I'm reading in order to write? Or I wrote a paragraph and then I needed to stop and look at some literature again. And I've been sitting here all day and it's been, you know, a couple hours and I've done enough. I will sort of get to a point where I'll say, okay, well, that kind of equals 300 to 500 words. So again, every day I'm making progress and I'm using this time productively to work on some kind of project. A good way to think about being a productive educator, scholar, researcher, if you think about it, is read every day. Or a good way to think about it is, a good day for me is to write a little, to read a little, to meet with a few students, work on teaching a little, talk with a couple of colleagues, go home and have a great evening with my children and family. So everything, working on it a little. Today, again, I came in at 8. I wrote from 8:30 to 10:30. I took a break. I'm doing this conference now, talking for a little bit. When I get done, I'm going to develop an agenda for week 7 of one of the courses I'm teaching. Then I have some I'm the chair of the IRB for Baylor, and then I'm going to review a couple of research proposals at the end of the day and then go home. That's a good day. And if students want to come see me, they can come see me. Finally, this is something I've learned, again, as a Christian educator. I always write with the door open. Now, this has evolved over time. When I was at Northwest Nazarene University, I kept a do not disturb sign on the door. And I really had I really wrestled with, you know, wanting to be available with students and having my time for writing and sort of what comes first. I really believe my students' work comes first. My students' time needs to take precedent. Early on, I really had trouble understanding what, you know, I figured if my door was closed or did not disturb, you know, they could at least knock. So first I had a do not disturb sign whenever I was writing. Then I just took the sign down, figured people can knock on the door and come in, but nobody ever came in. Now I just leave it open, and now so many students come in, but I never feel guilty. I never feel like I'm behind closed doors doing work while I should be doing something else. I'm always available. If a student walks in, I'll stop what I'm doing. I'll take a couple of minutes. Yesterday I came in and a colleague I haven't seen all summer came and sat down and talked for a while. There's no pressure because, you know, I'm still writing. It's fine. And I was able to just get right back to it. So I really suggest learning to write with the door open. Okay, that's how I approach writing. That I do the same thing all the time, and that's basically the method to my madness. Ken, any questions, or if you want to chime in now? Hello, anyone there?
Hey, Michael, I'll open up the lines.
Okay.
Chris, do you have a certain time of the day that you usually set aside, or does it depend on your schedule?
Good question. I think each person needs to think when I've gotten to a point where I know I'm more creative. I can create in the mornings. I can consume in the evening. So I grade papers in the evenings. I review IRB research proposals in the afternoons. I try to do the writing in the morning. Now, when I say in the morning, you know, some people like to get up at 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock. For me, I need my 8 hours of sleep, and I need to be present at home, getting my kids breakfast, getting them out the door. I handle all the laundry in my house, kind of thing. So I really believe I write in my office from about 8 to whenever. And I don't really have a time. Some days that 300 words takes a long time. Sometimes it just comes out.
Michael, do you have a rule about keeping your email open or answering your phone when you're writing?
Good question. I will sometimes check my email first thing in the morning, but then I shut it off. I don't have the email on at all while I'm writing.
And here's
the cognitive thing, okay? And I think it's I'm a New Yorker, so sometimes I say some things that comes across the wrong way, whatever. But I'll just say it. I think that especially at small universities, or if you're not used to writing, a lot of times the busy work becomes a self-defense mechanism, rationalization for not writing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more you give in to that work, the more you give in to, the more that time gets away. There's a younger colleague, or actually he's older than me, but he works so hard, but yet he doesn't get anything done. So you got to think about how, you know, when you say how are we to expend your energy and writing and working and stuff like that, I think also the compulsion to feel as if I must respond to an email first thing in the morning maybe has more to do to my own self work grandiosity of what I think I'm, you know, how important I am, more than anything else. So I tend to just leave it alone. Save email and phone messages until after you're writing that day. Again, write a little, read a little, interact with people a little, work on your classes a little.
Michael, on average, I mean, I know you say 500 words, but that can look different. on average, how much time do you spend writing every day?
It depends. It really depends. It could be 2 hours. It could be 3 hours. It could be all afternoon, all day. I mean, if I get going in the morning, it just really depends. I do write every morning. Now this semester I teach all day on Monday, so I'm going to write 4 days a week. So I teach a morning class and I teach an evening class. I mean, a morning and an afternoon. So there's no way I can work in any writing that day. I wouldn't be able to be fully present if I came in early and wrote.
Did you make accommodations, changes in the way you teach, in the way that you grade, in the way that you participate in, I don't know, committees? I mean, it seems to me like somewhere along the line, in order to find 2 to 3 hours a day to write, there something must have given, since obviously from what you're saying, it's not your time with the Lord, it's not your time with the family. So what kind
Terry Terrio, you know, she and I work together. I mean, it's just something I've always done. I've always done it. I can't. It's the first thing I do when I get to the office. I'm thinking about writing. I've been doing it for so long that, I just think you have to think through. I think my colleagues would say that I'm a dependable, helpful colleague. I serve on a couple committees. I chair the IRB. I get things turned around, Rick will say, pretty fast whenever I'm working on stuff. I'm chairing this religion and spirituality work group for the Council on Social Education, and I review articles for other journals and stuff like that. And it's just a matter of, again, moving, creating that space and a mindset of, as a Christian educator, who is your audience? Who are your students? Is it, do you want to contribute to the community of scholars? And I think a lot of people have great ideas and they just get into this mode where they're fearful, or they get, if they don't do it, and it's hard to get started. So the amount of time, some days it's a half hour, some days it's 30 minutes, some days it's an hour, some days it's two, but sometimes it's dispersed. I might write for an hour, take a break, someone come in or a phone call, and get back to it, write another paragraph.
Good.
Another way to think about 300 and 500, that's why I don't think about time, I do words. 300 to 500 words is really 2 to 3, maybe 3 to 4 good paragraphs. If I go up to 600 words, a good paragraph is 100 to 150 words, 5 sentences. I would really encourage you, if you're getting started, don't think 300 words. Think about a good paragraph. Think about writing 1 or 2 good paragraphs a day.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
And especially if you're only writing journal articles, if you think a journal article usually is somewhere between 5 and 8,000 words, and that includes references. So if you wrote a couple of paragraphs every day, just do the math.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you incorporate students?
You mean students into my writing, or students like teaching and dealing with students?
No, students as writers, researchers, scholars.
I think as I've been productive, what has happened is students approach me interested in working on projects. And so I've done a couple of independent studies. I've had graduate assistants who I invite onto manuscripts, all of those kinds of things. And the more they know that that's what you do and that's what you're about, I get approached quite a bit for that. So every year, the last 5 years, I've had at least one publication that a student had some type of authorship on.
Thanks.
Michael, you're saying that when you're...
Sometimes that opportunity for students doesn't go anywhere. And that's something I've had to work... I've been mentoring gentleman who's going to be starting his doctorate at the University of Tennessee, and we were going to work on a project. Again, you know, in my head I have like this conceptual factory going on where I have several projects I'm thinking about, several projects I'm working on, several projects that are under review. And now that I'm tenured, now some of the, my factory, I don't know if it's slowed down, but it's changing. I'm interested in writing more books right now. But I'll invite students on to some of these projects, and sometimes they just don't pan out. Sometimes they say they're going to work on it when they graduate, and they just don't have the motivation. They, you know, it's just not in them to do it. And sometimes it just doesn't go anywhere. So, you know, who knows? If I start a dozen projects at the beginning of the factory and I only get 4 or 5 out that year, that's okay. It gives students the opportunity to do it. Sorry, next question.
I just had a question about, to go back to the editing. I'm like 2 years out from the dissertation and still have articles that I'd like to pull out of that. And just the whittling that down, you know, from 60 pages down to 20 pages for an article that I'm thinking of right now. How do you count that? Like, if do I just hammer on 3 to 5 paragraphs and consolidating down to 3 to 5 paragraphs and that's my day's work? I mean, how would you approach that?
Yeah, I would, again, instead of trying to think about, okay, I got to spend this summer and I got to get 2 or 3 things out this summer. See, you're starting, instead of being grateful and having approaching it as a creative thing, you're approaching it as a job. And so you're already putting yourself behind sort of mentally and cognitively now where it's a chore. I would really encourage you to take a legal pad, go sit at a Starbucks or whatever floats your boat, and begin, if you want to bring your dissertation with you, and then start writing out some of the things you really want to say to the community of scholars. Don't really think about getting articles out yet. Just from your dissertation, what are the couple of things that you really are just really contributions that you want to get out there? You know, or what are some of the possible products that you can get out from your dissertation? Write those, you know, down with no expectation at all. And then the next step is, again, just very lightly, you know, if you were to take one of them or a couple of them, depending on how you feel, then create some outlines, not even thinking about the dissertation, just thinking about, you know, if I'm going to get this out and say what I want to say, here's an outline of how I might go about doing it. Then, once you have that down, then go and type it out. Think about sort of, and now, so now what you're doing, you've thought about it, you've written it out once, you've actually typed it out again, it's giving you a third time to think it through, and your brain's going to be kicking into gear here. You're getting used to doing it on a daily basis, and now at some point, then you are able to turn back and say, you know, some of the information you might be able to adapt to fit in from your dissertation, some you might have to go back and read a little bit of literature to supplement or create a new idea, a new way to say it. But again, you're not necessarily pushing it off, but you're not by the time you're getting to where you're writing these articles, you already have an outline, you've already thought it through several times over, and you've made little progress each day towards this work. You've already invested yourself down the road a bit. Are any of you? I'm not a long distance runner, but I do lift powerlift. But I do. I would say that writing is very much, if you think about how you would train to run marathons, is quite similar. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, again, all of that little tiny, all those steps you take in the beginning. To sort of create a habit, or Ken, you can say better than me, like you create a base from which you then can be productive upon and build upon. But to look at your dissertation, this 300-page document, say, okay, now I got to get 4 articles out of it from nowhere. You know, you're just creating a lot of pressure.
May I ask, when in your career you started building this discipline? Was it in the first 5 years, or how did you get started in it?
As soon as I got to Northwest Nazarene University, I decided that I wanted to teach at a Christian university, but I also loved writing. I loved producing. I thought I was going to teach at like Chicago or something. And so when I got to Northwest Nazarene University, there really wasn't a culture of support or anything of writing there at all. I approached a colleague there in the department, said, "Hey, we could work on this and this together," and there was just no interest. And then what I began to experience is this, I call it sort of like this guise of again, self-defense mechanisms of all the reasons why you can't write at a small Christian school. Mm-hmm. Teaching too many classes, they don't pay you enough, there's not the support. There's so many reasons to, you know, that why a lot of faculty get into this thing where they just don't do it, and then they don't do it the longer they don't do it, and then it's just, you know, it's completely foreign to them to think about spending time that way. So from the beginning, I just decided that I knew I wanted to have the opportunity to be productive, and if I ever wanted to leave, I wanted to create, you know, habits to publish. And so I wrote every day starting there. And then I eventually was chair of the Scholars Guild, thinking about how we write and all that. So, mm-hmm. but even at South Carolina, even when I was working on my doctorate, I guess maybe even there, when other students were working on their class assignments, I always felt that the doctorate level, that it was a waste of time to write a paper for like one professor.
Okay.
You know? So even then, I was always working on projects outside of class in addition to the projects in class. So, I mean, I had like 12 publications when I graduated with my doctorate.
Okay.
So maybe I did begin there. But again, because I wasn't planning on going to teaching at a Christian university, it was only at the end where I really felt called to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been helpful in that I know God gives the motivation to be and to do. That's the first thing. And then, for me, it would mean building a discipline in my life as I do going to the gym or working on the 5K, not the marathon. But even the steps to do that, it is just to first have the motivation to do and then to build it into what is already a busy life, but to carve out time, really, is what I think I hear you say, that belongs to.
To the Lord, that's right.
Yes. Well, it all belongs to the Lord, as I see it, but instead of doing 10,000 things, to carve out time where that is the thing that I offer back to Him.
Yeah, I just think back to how when you were working on your PhDs, you know, all of the creativity and the thoughts you had about different projects you wanted to study and things you wanted to write. That's what writing is. That's a creative opportunity to do those things. I also think it's easier, a little motto I have, again, a cognitive message I tell myself, it's easier to critique than it is to stick your neck out. So the longer you stay as a reviewer or a critiquer of information, instead of, and I think as Christian educators, when we step in front of our students, we want to be people that contribute as well, that are part of the conversation. The longer you stay as a critiquer and reviewer and a consumer, and you're not contributing, again, it goes back to that self-defense mechanism. It's we don't like to be evaluated. We don't like to have our ideas sort of reviewed and critiqued. And so then when someone doesn't agree with what we write or think about something else, you know, then what does that mean? So I think it's very important as when I step in front of students that are paying however much money to go for a Christian education that, you know, I'm an expert in what I do. And part of that is contributing to the dialogue so that when we read from a Hipsy text that's written by someone that from a paradigm that I might not be consistent with, I have input to share sort of where I might be coming from.
Mm-hmm.
What advice could you give for anyone who's listening? I have a second language. So English is my second language here, and I have done very well. But recently I find myself having to write in Spanish and then translate to English, which takes me a lot longer. And I see this happening as I age. And I don't know if anyone is having this experience and how can I handle this.
I can't speak to the bilingual, but I can speak to not worrying so much about how long it takes. If you're writing every day, even if you have to take it from Spanish to English, you're still going to make progress every day. You're still likely to be the most productive colleague you have at your department or whatever. When they begin seeing you work every day, it becomes a pattern of who you are. I'll give you an example of something that I do that slows me down even more than others. Is I don't use a software to do my references. I still do it the old-fashioned way. I actually type out all of my references as an added at the end of each thing I'm working on. It slows me down. It's another day of writing. It makes me read through my article a whole other time. It makes you think through, do I actually need that many references? Which ones really matter? And even though it causes me a couple extra days of writing, I'm still churning out 5 or 6 articles a year and a couple books. And
Okay.
Because again, you got to think long term. 300 to 500 words a day. If you get 20 good days of writing in a month, multiply that by 12. I mean, that's a lot of words.
Dr. O'Shea, I want to just thank God for your life. You're such a great blessing to the body of Christ. And I have a couple of questions I want to ask you. And I would really want to thank you for giving us scriptural backups for, a sound mindset. What you said about the scriptures really inspired other scriptures in me, seeing myself as in partnership with God to contribute to scholarship and literature that Christians and other people could read. Now the question I have for you is this: in your experience, what journals would you suggest that one should target when one is writing? That is number one question. Number two question is: how do you manage multiple authorship? For instance, if you have other people from other schools.
Right. Very good. Very good.
Manage doing that. And finally, one other question I would ask is, for someone like me, if I want to veer off my dissertation into a new area, what advice would you give?
Okay, so let me try to take up the first one. I guess as I'm writing, I don't really, the actual thing that I'm working on then sort of helps me choose the right journal. I that's really what... I don't sit out thinking about a journal first. I think about what my topic is. I think about how I want to say it. I think about my thoughts and assumptions about the profession, and then I choose the journal. And then when I am doing multiple, when you have multiple out, one of the things I've really wrestled with, for instance, is. Over the last 3 years, I've just finished a large $3 million grant to study sex education. I've really wrestled with, do I go outside of social work to other journals, like the Journal of Adolescence and those kinds of things? And I guess I've just come to, again, back to my personal mission statement, I'm a Christian scholar in social work. I want to impact my discipline. I don't know what your personal mission statement is. Just think through who your audience is. Now I'm writing a book for a secular publisher. My last book was with NACSW. That audience was specific. Rick and I have talked about writing the next book on philosophical foundations for Christians and social work. So that, again, that would be a different targeted audience. So think through your audience. In terms of authorship, I've really learned to, and I get this from Dr. Miriam Johnson at University of South Carolina, my first research class, but I think it's true. I've always tried to be super generous with authorship. I try to give it away as much as possible. Some people would say that the way I do it sometimes is even too, like, is it unethical or whatever, where a student does a lit review and helps me organize some stuff, and I put her on as a second author or fourth author, but she didn't write the article kind of thing. I just tend to give authorship away. Again, it goes back to, for me, you know, what, you know, am I seeking glory? And again, academia is such a jealous lover that when I start, you know, waning and thinking about sort of building my own whatever it is that never lasts, that fades away, I really try to stay away from anything about sort of focusing on my own name, so to speak. So that would be my suggestion kind of thing, and especially if you're working at a secular university where you have an opportunity to witness where I think you might cry, son, you know, if you may not be able to witness in a way that is as explicit as I can, but the way you approach your authorship and work, and I also believe, like Alvin Plantinga talks about this, as Christian scholars, not only should we create a critique, but it's the way we go about our work should look different to the outside world. And I believe that's one way to distinctively be different, is to not worry so much about authorship.
Michael, can I jump in for just a moment, Michael? I see we're getting close to one, and it's fine if we want to go longer, but in case people are leaving, I wonder if you wanted to make your announcement about the work group, just in case people have to go, so that you get that in.
Oh, yes, yes. So Rick and I have worked with there are a group of 18 scholars that have created the Council on Social Education, Religion, and Spirituality work group, and we created an online clearinghouse that's going to go live September 1 on the CSWE website. It's of scholars from every religious discipline, background, sexual orientation, gender you could think of, and we wanted to see if we could work together to help create resources for faculty at all institutions to be able to adequately address, I think it's EPAS, is it 2.1 point, I forget the exact number, the diversity one. I think it's 2.1.4.
Yeah.
So we wanted to be able to do that. You know, there are so many universities that don't even approach teaching that. So we wanted to create an opportunity for scholars and educators to share with one another in a peer-reviewed format a way of what are they doing in their classroom and how can others take that and use it. And so there's going to be a template available. So if you are doing something innovative in your classroom or not, or just different or something that might be useful, it's a way for you to write it up, in a brief 3 to 6 page format we've someone submitted a full syllabus, someone submitted a curriculum module, someone submitted an assignment, and as these things grow, it'll create a clearinghouse database broken down by those different topics, by the different lengths, so we can all share with one another ways to infuse religion and spirituality in ethically in social work.
Okay.
So it'd be a great opportunity for those that are thinking about publication, and it is peer reviewed through CSWE. Ed Kand and I are the co-editors, at least for now.
So did we submit that to CSWE on the website, or?
Right, there will be a place to do that. We're piloting the review process so that we sort of get the nuts and the bolts fixed and working out. So we've had a couple that we've sent through to see how the process is going to work. We're going to do a hot topic session at 8 p.m. to invite people to share more about the clearinghouse. Yes, you'll interact directly with someone at CSWE who handles the processing of the materials, and then it goes out to two reviewers, and then comes to editor myself. We alternate every other month as editor, and then you'll get feedback and make appropriate revisions, and it'll get posted online. The nice thing about the online is, as soon as it's accepted, it gets put online, you know, within a week or so.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Michael, I'm not sure what your time commitment is. It's 1 o'clock now.
It's only noon for me, so if others have questions, I'm fine.
Okay, so we'll stay on a bit longer. For those who do have to leave, I want to thank you for being involved. Please feel free to stay on if you'd like to talk with Michael some more, just dialogue in general.
I forgot Chrysan's third question. Can you repeat it again?
Well, I was asking that if one is having if you are research focused from the dissertation, what would you advise?
Oh, yes, yes. Okay, well, again, I think it comes with, again, that mindset of being a scholar. You know, you're going to have your pragmatic things that you need to do. So it depends on what university you're at. You might need to write just for the sake of writing, right, to get some publications going. But once you do that and you get the confidence, I think having that base and then, again, allowing yourself to say things that are different. And note, you know, I've been called a lunatic in my career. My first book came out, three people loved it. I had three reviews and two people destroyed it. You know, that goes back to that mindset. So if you're willing to put something out there that's new and different, just know that, you know, people are going to respond to it. They're going to react. I would encourage you to think that that's really what your role is.
Okay, thank you so much, sir.
Does that make sense, Chrysan?
Yeah, it does. Yes, very well. I mean, I like the word pragmatic focus based on where one is. I understand that very perfectly. Thank you so much, sir.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments?
I just want to say I really, really appreciate just you starting out with the mindset, because I think that is just the most important thing, is starting out with a positive mindset instead of a scarcity mindset. I think I always tend to look at it as I'm behind. I haven't started, or, you know, I've... So I think it's just really helpful to sort of change our mindset. I think that really is sort of the beginning place. So I really appreciate
what you
say about that.
And what's so funny is that that's what we would be the first thing we do to help our clients, right?
I know. It's so true. So true.
I just think that is so critical, that the practice behaviors, what work for you specifically, whether you write 3 days a week or whatever, or this or that, is not as important as getting your messages right for yourself.
Yeah, and I also like that you're using the the terminology about practice behaviors, because and that whole idea of how those are formative in themselves. So that just really resonates with me. So thank you so much for that. That's very helpful.
Another mindset thing is when people ask you, what are you going to be writing this summer? Or, again, our dean asked, what are your writing plans for the summer? My response was, it's the same as always. I don't have a writing plan for the summer. In fact, I'm going to take 6 weeks and not do any writing this summer, because I wrote all year.
That's good.
Very good. Well, were there any other questions or comments, discussion before we end? Okay, well, Michael, thank you so much. Just, it was so thoughtful. You know, you started with scripture, you started with linking to the Christian life, but you also gave us some really pragmatic suggestions, and we just appreciate your transparency, kind of talking about what's worked, what hasn't worked for you. So thank you for doing this. Thanks to everyone who joined us. We really appreciate it. If any of you who are listening have ideas about future topics you'd like to see covered in a call like this, or perhaps even if you're interested in being a presenter on a call, please let Rick or me know. We'd love to talk to you more about that. I hope you all have a great rest of the summer and a good, productive fall. I hope your classes come together for you, and we hope you will be able to use this conference call and find some time to write as well.
And if anybody wants my PowerPoint slides or points, Rick has those, so he can send those to you.
Yeah, just shoot me an email, and I'll turn those right around to you so you can have them for your reference.
Very good. Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank
bye,
you.
Rick.
Michael.
Bye, Ken. Bye, everyone.
Hey, we'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
That was good.